All right, welcome into the latest edition of Hear That Podcast Growlin'. It's a big one. It's one we look forward to because it means we're in a game week finally. The season is actually here. It is our season preview edition of the podcast. Ah, it just feels so nice. And we, you know what? I promise after this, we're not going to talk about COVID the entire episode. We're just going to talk about football and like games and like matchups and important things in football. And that's it. And that's why I brought a special guest. On top of Jay being here, of course, as always, Mo Egger has joined us because when it's big, Mo shows up.
Yeah. When you don't want to talk COVID, you bring me in. although now there's a chance I could actually go to a game this year. So
how about that?
I'm pretty excited about that.
That's possibility. Right. The Jaguars game is the one that is set to have 6,000 fans in now as they allow that. The opener still no fans. And then the Thursday night game in Cleveland will have the 6,000 fans on the other side of the state. So some fans starting to get in. So you want that potential disappointment and heartbreak in person. You know, it's like, don't you wish you could be at some of these Reds games, you know, to really get that sad walk back to the car?
Obviously, yesterday's Reds game was played in Pittsburgh. But yes, I would have had a few things to say, would have had a few things I would have yelled out there. No, I hope I'm greatly disappointed that I can't be there for Joe Burrow's professional debut on Sunday. That would have been awesome. But I like going to Bengals games, so hopefully at some point that could happen for more than just a few thousand people.
Yeah. Let's dive in. Well, later on, we will get to a little bit into, the cut down to 53, which was, Jay, I mean, I think you missed one on the projected. I mean, it was really, we said this from the beginning, it was going to be as straightforward of a cut as you really can get because there's no chance for guys to really kind of come up, go down, create tough decisions. You kind of knew who your team was going to be coming in. The team was the team, and that proved to be the case outside of a trade. The Bengals traded Austin Kalitro, who we spent a lot of time at the end of last week talking about, for Christian Covington, who's a defensive tackle from Denver, played in Houston with DJ Reader, rotation piece, a guy they needed in the back of that room to kind of give you some snaps. And you know, they keep Marcus Bailey, and they had kind of a little bit of extra at linebacker. Denver had a little bit extra at defensive line. It's nice when you can make those two needs meet.
Yeah, it was the kind of the perfect combination where you don't have a really deep roster and you didn't have the full offseason ramp up for any undrafted guys to kind of bubble up and surprise you. So it was a cut and dry 53. Did think that the waiver claim they made for putting Trey Waynes on IR would have been a little more of a splash. There were some interesting guys that got waived around the league. But you know, they get the backup guard from Miami who undrafted last year, kind of didn't have an overall good grade from PFF, but improved as the season went on. And it's just another depth piece on the offensive line. Maybe we'll see him on special teams here and there, but if things go well, they won't need to rely on him much at all this year.
Things are going poorly if Shaq Calhoun is starting games. I can tell you that much. But, you know, yeah, you're right. It goes back to one of the things we talked about is, you know, it's going to go back to your college scouts evaluation. So if they had a good evaluation on him at one point, you know, coming out of school, and they also liked some of what they saw of him last year, then he ends up on your radar and you pick him up. Thought Josh Rosen would have been an interesting call to bring him in. He didn't have a ton of money left on his contract. You could have made an argument for, you know, just if you're in a year where you're going to be comfortable having more quarterbacks, which they've shown that they are, why not take a chance on developing that guy? You have the number one waiver claim. They chose not to, you know, hey, more Ryan Finley affirmation, which is
just, you know, great. Josh Rosen went to Miami, and all I heard for months and months and months and months is how the Miami Dolphins are this place where if you're a quarterback, you go and you thrive, and if you come to Cincinnati, you're doomed to fail. So I thought it was interesting that it didn't work out for Josh in South Florida.
Yeah, I, you know, it's very, it, he's an, it, why people I mean, we don't know enough. Obviously, inside the league, I mean, no one picked him up. No one placed a claim on Rosen. So it's not like the Bengals were alone in that. Obviously, there's some interesting baggage there because, I mean, he from an outsider's perspective, you look at it and say, man, he hasn't really had a chance anywhere. He was on in front of an awful Arizona offensive line and then just a bad season, and then never really did anything, had a chance to do anything last year. He was the guy who was a top 10 pick, basically. I mean, what's going on there? But obviously something is, and he'll go sit and watch Tom Brady play for a year, I guess, and see what happens there, and hopefully the Bengals don't have to watch Ryan Finley play.
That'll be my luck. I'll finally be allowed to go to a game. And Ryan Finley will be behind center.
Yeah.
Well, will you still go?
No. I'm good.
Yeah.
Hard pass.
You don't want to see that. You've seen that show. Seen the movie. Don't need to go back. I have some things I want to run through. There's going to be a series of run past or boots here at the end about this season. But I feel like the way it sets up for the Bengals, and my season prediction I just posted up on the site, and Mo, you know, we do our hour together every Tuesday, from 3 to 4 on 15:30. I'm sure we'll talk more about it tomorrow. I look forward to that. We do that every week. I'm excited about that. I'll even be joining you, on the Tony and Mo football show on the 21st, which is Monday
from Twin Peaks in Westchester.
From Twin Peaks.
Yes.
That's exciting. Well, I'll say this. I'm pumped to do that show because that will be a very eventful first week when you go those two games. You're gonna learn a lot about this team in the series in a point of 5 days or whatever it is, and we'll come back on that Monday and talk about it. So I'm looking forward to that. But to me, you look at this season and I don't think there's a, and we could be proven wrong. I mean, there's a lot of unknowns about this team. They don't look like a team that you're expecting to be in the hunt. Like there's a lot of rebuild still happening, rookie quarterback, a lot of new pieces, all that stuff. I don't think that's realistic. So to me, the biggest question to ask when assessing this team will be, what does success and failure look like? And where is that line that you would say this season is a failure and they need to reevaluate some things? And where is the line where you say success, even if it doesn't mean playoffs or a certain number of wins? Where is that for you guys, Jay? I'll start with you. What constitutes the line between success and failure for the 2020 Bengals?
I would say a better second half than a first half, just seeing some ascension as the year goes on and some improvement and building some momentum for next year when the window really opens on what you think can be a return to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Numerically, I went 7 wins. You on the surface, you say 7-9 is that's a losing season. How can you deem that successful? But when you're coming off a 2-win season, a 5-win improvement, no matter whether you go from 9-14 or 3-8 or 2-7, as it would be in this case, 5 wins is a significant improvement. So, that's a game and a half over the Vegas line. So you're topping what everyone expects you to do. I don't know if Bengal fans would agree with that, but in my mind, that feels where the line would be is if they can get to 7 wins and have, 3 of those be in the final 5 weeks of the season where you're kind of building and feeling good about things going into the off season.
I think numerically the number for me is 6. That's a 200% improvement from last year. If my math is correct, it's over the Vegas line. And if you win 6 games coming off the season, they have that to me means they will have beaten a team or two that you would say, boy, they have no chance of beating. That certainly to me is an indicator of improvement. But less numerically, if I can answer the following 3 questions with the answer yes, I'm going to feel great about this season. Question number 1, and I feel like I'm going to say yes to this, do they have their quarterback? Question number 2, do they have their coach? Because I don't know. I want to walk away from this season feeling like, you know what, coach and quarterback are settled. And then I feel like if I can answer those 2 questions, I should be able to answer the 3rd question in the affirmative, and that's, can they make the playoffs in 2021? I've said often that I want to feel at the end of this season the same way that I felt at the end of Carson Palmer's first year, where I had seen enough improvement. You know, if you remember those first 3 or 4 games, he was really uneven. And then before he got hurt, Those last three or four games, you could just look at the numbers. It's uncanny, the statistical leap that he made. But I remember that season going, okay, next year they can hit the ground running. And I want to feel that way at the end of this season. I feel like if I can go, you know what, 2021, they can hit the ground running. They can contend for a division title. They should make the playoffs. I sort of feel like that's largely independent of a win total. You know, clearly if they finish something like 3-13, it's going to feel massively disappointing. But I sort of feel like if they're in that 6-7 win range, which I think is attainable, we are going to feel really good about their chances in 2021. And we're going to feel really good about their chances in 2021. I feel like if we feel with a great amount of certainty that they have their quarterback and frankly, more uncertain right now, whether or not they have their coach, if we feel like that Zach Taylor's the guy, I think we're going to feel pretty good.
I would agree. I mean, I think you're exactly right. But I would say for me, if I'm putting a number on it, it is looking at Joe Burrow's efficiency numbers over the final eight games, because that is a reflection on both coach and quarterback. Mm-hmm. I mean, Zach Taylor is going to be defined more by how Joe Burrow plays than he is even wins probably on this team, because he's here to develop the star quarterback. That's what he is. That's what he was as a coach. It's why you hired him. And this is setting up perfect for him. And if he can't do it, no one is going to blame Joe Burrow. If Joe Burrow plays poorly, they're going to blame the coach. They're going to blame the system. And if that's going to be probably a rightful place to place blame. So to me, I look at, what are the final eight games? What does the second half of Joe Burrow's season look like? Is he, and do we plug him in as, you know, one of the better quarterbacks in the league over that span? I think that is going to be a line of success and failure. And then, you know, you've got to get the six wins. I agree with you. I mean, you come back and you have a 3-13 or a 4-12 after last year and all the money they put into the team. You know, we talk a lot of this down the street right now. You put a bunch of money into the team and they still lose. You just have a lot more questions than maybe you thought you did. I mean, this is their chance to have their guys. They've got it. They still have to win some games. I will say if Joe Burrow plays well, and then I have another thing on this. Their last four games will come against Dallas, Pittsburgh on Monday Night Football, both of those, and three of these four are at home, at Houston and Baltimore. You could argue, and I would argue pretty with confidently, all four of those will be playoff teams. That is going to be a definitive run for if this team has accomplished their goal. They need to win a couple of those games. They need to be able to, assuming health of Burrow, really, they need to be able to beat those teams and prove that they can beat playoff teams and be at that level by that point in the season. It's a great run to have those types of tests in the position that they're in as measuring sticks for where they still need to, you know, fix things going into next year and where they're really at as far as maybe being close. I think if we're talking about wins and losses, I look at those as the ones where I'm saying win those, win some of those. And I will really care about the outcome. The rest of it is all about Burrow's progress, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say Houston is a sure thing for as a playoff team, but you're right. That last month of December is really important, and especially the Pittsburgh game. We talked about it last year. Where what was it, week four when they played at Pittsburgh in Monday night, and how Zach could basically get a statue built for him if they could go into that game and win that game. You know, kind of exercise the Pittsburgh demon and the primetime demon, and they lay an egg and 27-3. So this is, you know, this will be way down the road as we know what Joe Burrow's becoming, but that I think that is one of the more significant games on the schedule just because of the team and the setting. They have a primetime game in week two, but it's on the road in Cleveland. Everything's still fresh and new. I think that Pittsburgh game, that'll be really telling. If they can finally beat the Steelers in PBS and do it on primetime, that's a huge step toward building momentum for 2021, even though it is just one game.
Yeah, the whole new day thing revolves around things that we hopefully see moving forward that we didn't see for years and years and years and years. A primetime win against the Pittsburgh Steelers, are you kidding me? And potentially, you know, hindering their playoff chances would be, I can't think of anything that would, you know, catapult fans into a really rosy looking offseason than doing something like that. But yeah, it's funny because for months, understandably so, we've talked about the first four games. You know, we always seem to sort of break the season into quarters. And, you know, to me, looming on the horizon has been that last quartet of games where you go, okay, those could be against playoff teams. One of them is going to be on a big main stage against Pittsburgh. And what sort of shape this team is in, how capable they are. I mean, I think the thing that stood out to me last year about the Bengals more than anything, and I think this sort of lends me to believe that maybe they have their coaches. I never saw a team quit. I saw a team play hard, all that sort of stuff. We've talked about all that. If this season mathematically has the Bengals not in the hunt over those last four games, and they're still motivated to play spoiler, they're still playing hard, they're still playing with a purpose, they're still, you know, all those sort of grade school-y, hokey sort of things that we saw from this team last year, if we see them and they manifest, they turn out to you know, crank out wins, I don't know. I don't know how you wouldn't walk away from the season, you know, happy with the direction for the future.
All right, let's take a quick break. I want to remind you that fantasy football draft season is upon us, and due to quarantine, it's very possible that you might have Zeke's haircut in your pants. That's why our partners at Manscaped have partnered with us to make sure you don't gamble on shaving the same way you like to gamble on football. That means you get some of Manscaped's good and safe products like the Lawnmower 3.0. It's the best hygiene tool for the modern man. Because of their ceramic blade and skin-safe technology, your nicks and snags will be reduced. You don't want those. They have forever changed the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0, which comes with the new and improved lawnmower, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag for you to use when you're done quarantining. Some other liquid formulations like the Crop Preserver, the Crop Reviver. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant. You all need those. You need it. Get 20% off free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with and free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code THEATHLETIC20. Time to boost your hygiene with the absolute besties with Manscaped. On the other side of things, you know, you have to answer why are things going wrong if they do go wrong, if you are facing that. And you talked about coach, and I wanna dive into this because we've been so Burrow focused, and understandably, like, he's the exciting new piece and all of that stuff. But the thing that I don't think we have talked enough about is where are we at with this coaching staff right now and in the confidence that they can get this done. I'll say this. So what is one word that you would use to describe your feelings toward the coaching staff entering the season? I mean, where do you stand with that, Jay?
I will say precipice. They are right there. They're looking out over the glory of all that can be a magnificent run with Joe Burrow and this youngish roster, but one wrong step and it's bad news. It just feels like this season the franchise can go one way or the other, or not necessarily the franchise, but the futures of this coaching staff. Because like you guys said, if it's 3-13, 4-12 again this year, then some really hard questions have to be answered, and you could see them, you know, possibly moving on from this coaching staff that quickly if they don't show really good improvement. So it just feels like everything is right there for them. They've gotten to where they need to be, and now they can't make a false step.
What do you think, Mo?
I jotted down the word ticking, as in the clock is ticking. I sort of feel like, because Marvin Lewis was here for 16 years, that when the Bengals replaced him, we sort of assumed this is going to be the head coach for the next decade or something like that. And maybe he is. And if he is, he will have had some success. But for my money, I remember sort of positioning this when they hired Zach Taylor, really when they were going through the coaching search process. All right, this is going to be the Bengals head coach whenever the Bengals have a different quarterback. Now, we didn't know who it was going to be. We didn't know how they were going to get that quarterback. We didn't know what the transition from Dalton to whoever that quarterback was going to be like. But to me, that's why you hired Zach Taylor. And you didn't hire him to usher in this new era with a new quarterback thinking he's going to get 5 or 6 years for his plan to unfold. It's more like two. Now, if like a lot of people, I discount last year and go, okay, yeah, no chance. They weren't going to succeed. Their failures were not on him last year for a young coach, first time in the NFL, hopefully provided valuable learning experience. But the clock is starting now. And if over the next 2 years, you know, you're not seeing the sort of win-loss totals we're looking for, and you're not seeing the improvement this season, and you see a team, you know, now we start to judge Zach by all the things we used to beat Marvin up for. Play calling and clock management and game management and roster decisions and personnel usage and, you know, all this stuff that last year just felt irrelevant. It was absent from the conversation. It didn't matter. Now it does. And so for me as a fan, you know, over these next two seasons, if the idea is to win while you have Joe Burrow under a rookie contract for 4 to 5 years of team control, I'm not, if it doesn't happen over the first half of that run, I'm not going to proceed with the same coaching staff. I'm not going to proceed with the same head coach by any stretch. And so to me, the clock is ticking. I need to feel by the end of this year, okay, you know what? They've got some stuff they've got to figure out with the roster, but they've got their head coach. For the most part, they've got their coaching staff. Right now, I don't know. But if by the end of the season, I still don't know, I think that's problematic.
I'm with you. I see this as 2 year run for Zach Taylor to prove that he's the guy. I think that's this year, next year. You know, you've had 3 years to build your roster and create your team. Last year, you know, what was this offseason about? We found out what we had. So rip that up. Well, okay, they spent a bunch of money and gave you the guys you want. You now have your quarterback, you have your guys, you have your second year in the offense. You know, kept majority of your staff together. This is now on you, and pandemic or not, like this, there are no excuses. And at some point, maybe it'll buy you a couple of losses early in the season. But beyond that, there's really not many excuses. You've got to know how to deal with this stuff. So my word is uncertain, because I just don't know. Like, last year was such a train wreck. You're right. You couldn't judge whether he's a good coach or not. Like, you just couldn't, because it was so awful. And there were so many other reasons why. So to me, you know, I think this is his year to prove that he can coach. And that means in game. It means week to week. No more of the growing distraction garbage that engulfed the season last year. That's on the coach too, big time. And so, you know, we can't have more Cordy Glenns. You can't have more lingering AJ Green situations. You can't have all that stuff. People will rip Marvin, and Lord knows we have on this show and every time I've had a microphone in front of my face, but I'll tell you this. Marvin Lewis was great at never letting that garbage keep going or get out. You know, his ship kind of ran along, and he put out, he was good at putting out fires that people didn't even know about. And last year we saw a lot of people know about a lot of fires, and they kept going. And what will it look like around here this year when things are supposed to be a little bit more under control? He's got to prove himself. It's on him. And you're right. This year is a massive year for him to prove himself too. And I just think we'll probably learn more about him this year than we maybe even will about Joe Burrow. And that might be more important.
I felt bad for Zach last year. I mean, we're just getting to know the guy, and then his first round pick gets hurt. And then the AJ Green stuff happens and, you know, the injury, and that obviously, you know, just got us to a place where it was the story of the season. And that certainly couldn't have helped Zach Taylor. I remember back in January going, okay, they're going to take Joe Burrow. Is there any shred of possibility that he is going to make life difficult for the Bengals by, you know, not wanting to play here, all that stuff that we just spent way too much time on in January and February? That ended up not being a problem. The AJ Green franchise tag thing. You guys are there every day. It seems to have that situation seems to at least be temporarily resolved, where it's not going to be a problem. Who knows if the team stinks this year, if AJ's toe is going to start bothering him or something, but we've reached a resolution there. The Joe Mixon thing got done. And then they spent, you know, more money in free agency than I ever thought the Bengals would spend in my lifetime. It you know, again, the pandemic and the way the whole offseason was thrown out of whack, every team's dealing with that. But it strikes me as a picture of serenity this offseason. There's been no controversies. There's been no holdouts. You know, the Trey Waynes injury obviously is a factor, but there's been no, like, franchise-altering injury. So all of that stuff seemingly got scraped off the plate, and now it's we judge you by wins, losses, how this team plays, how they respond to you, how they bounce back from adversity. You know, simple stuff that, you know, for years and years and years and years, all we did was hammer Marvin Lewis for how he did during replay challenges and whether or not they went for it on fourth down and stuff like that. And now, stuff that we didn't talk about at all last year, that stuff comes very clearly into focus. And I need to feel good about it by the end of the season before I can feel anything strongly about Zach Taylor.
Yeah, quiet so far, but there's still 16 weeks left for things to crop up. You just know how this franchise goes. I don't think it's going to be smooth sailing all year, but Zach did do the other thing, it wasn't totally unexpected, but, you know, you're starting left guard and Clint Bowling retires right before training camp and the Cordy Glenn thing. It was one thing after another, and then COVID. With the COVID, at least as much of a challenge as that has been, it's a level playing field. Every team's dealing with it. But yeah, there's going to be injuries this year. There's probably going to be, you know, another some sort of thing, unforeseen thing crop up that he has to deal with. But the good thing is he got practice dealing with that stuff. You can't expect him to have been Marvin level on putting out fires in his first year. I don't know if Marvin, I wasn't around for Marvin's first year. I don't know if he had any incidents like that, that he kept under wraps, but for Zach,
guys arrested. I know that.
Yeah, that is true. That's hard to keep under wraps.
You can't put that out very, very easily.
Exactly.
But, you know,
for him to get that out of the way early, it stunk last year for him and for the team, but it was great practice. I mean, that's what learning on the fly is all about. And, you know, sometimes it's better to get all that adversity out of the way early.
I alluded to it before, and I know there's fans who don't want to hear it. I know it's hokey, but I think back to two games last season, the Jets game where they finally win, and how happy Zach's players seemed for him. I'm sure it was a huge relief for the team collectively, but, you know, those players really seem to be happy for Zach Taylor. And then the Miami game, the first time in my life I've actively rooted against the Bengals, and I got guys crawling off the field. I have a team that, you know, comes back from down 15 points, and it made me mad because I wanted them to lose. But, again, I think that's for all of the good things you could say about Marvin, and at some point, I guess maybe we should stop talking about Marvin, but – you know, there were times over those last couple of seasons. I think back to the Vikings game that year, that day where it came out that he was not going to come back, and then he did come back, and that team mailed it in. And the Bears game in, I think, 17, which they had a lot of injuries, but late in the year where they just packed it in. And that didn't always happen. You know, they famously won that Baltimore game on New Year's Eve, which bumped them from the postseason. But there were a handful of times over those last couple of years where I thought that this team has maybe not entirely quit on Marvin, but he's not getting everybody's best effort. I never felt that way. I always felt like that team, whatever the message was from Zach during the week, they were responding with at least effort on Sundays. And if we're still clinging to that late this season, that's a problem. But I do think, just watching it from afar, that tells me that there is something that is successfully being conveyed by the coaching staff to the players, that he is getting them to not quit, that he is getting their full effort. That, to me, is encouraging. So, you know, people can take that for what it's worth, but for me, that was encouraging.
And I thought he had a great offseason. I mean, you mentioned all the things. I mean, those were all hurdles and influences that he had, whether we're talking about convincing the front office to spend on free agency, understanding the need to change perception and make people believe that they're headed in the right direction. And, you know, managing the Joe Burrow thing was part of this. I mean, whether that ever actually was going to come to fruition or not, I think he was proactive on it. And, you know, had a good relationship that he built with Joe and Joe's family and his agent and stuff from the very, very, very beginning. That was critical to setting a foundation of making sure nothing ever did come up that people were trying to drum up. Never let him listen to Carson Palmer or listen to anybody else that was saying negative stuff about the Bengals that was everywhere at that time. And so that that all of that together, and now having a team that's like seems to be kind of unified and tweeting about how they're proud to be a Bengal and all that stuff is just, it may seem trite for other franchises, but it's a big deal when you were 2-14 and you've been kind of a joke of a franchise for a while. And I think that there is genuine belief that something real is happening here. Partially that's because of the quarterback. Partially that's because of everything else that we've talked about. And Zach Taylor's been an influence behind that. I think he's established a little bit that he can navigate an offseason and make some good things happen with a lot of time. We just don't know if he's going to be a good coach. And to me, that's about watching these games and seeing if he's a good in-game coach. And we'll see what happens. I think that's an underlying, really fascinating aspect of this season that I just don't think many people have been talking about. All right, we're going to take a quick break and return with the rest of the show. Let's take a quick break. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. We avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, not feeling it, or Bengals got me down. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you get free online evaluation, ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you on the best treatment plan. And if medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you for free with two-day shipping. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to getroman.com/here today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's getroman.com/here, H-E-A-R, here. We'll do a little run, pass, or boot action here for you. We like to do run, pass, or boots around here. So let's pull a few out. Let's do this one. Run, pass, or boot, most likely to take the needed leap this season. They've got a bunch of these guys on this team. I picked three out in particular for us to debate and choose between. Most likely to take the needed leap this season, Michael Jordan, Jermaine Pratt, or William Jackson III. Jay, what do you got?
I'm going to run with Will. It seems like we're already starting to see that. It's hard, you know, to judge training camp, but just the way he has tracked balls and got his hands on balls, and it looks like he's so much more improved than last year. And you throw in the fact of the contract year, that just makes it feel like he's set up for a really big year. And he's got the best pedigree of any of those guys. You know, Michael Jordan, fourth round pick, Jermaine Pratt, a third round pick. Will Jackson was a first round pick, had a great lost his rookie year, but then had a great first year in the league, and he hasn't been able to duplicate that. And it just feels like he's not ready to give up on himself. No one else is ready to give up on him. This feels like his comeback year to really make that big leap and get back to where he was in 2017. I'm going to pass on Mike Jordan. I don't know if I'm booting Jermaine Pratt just because I don't think he has the pieces around him to be that big of a difference maker on defense, whereas Michael Jordan has Jonah Williams on one side of him and Trey Hopkins on the other. He's in a solid position. He looks really good. He makes Jonah Williams look like a normal sized human being when you see those two standing next to each other. He is still really young, but he was really young as a rookie. He's just kind of growing and maturing into his body. And I don't think he's going to take as big a leap as Will, but I do think we're going to see improvement from him, and we might see improvement from Jermaine Pratt, but it's going to be really hard for him to be considered taking a leap when I just don't feel like he has the pieces around him to stand out and make big splash plays on that defense.
Yeah. You know, everything, Jay, you just said, I would go run with William Jackson III because I've seen him have the kind of season that would lead me to believe that he's capable of being a star. And granted, it happened a while ago, 2017, but you know, back during that season, I think a lot of us were convinced that by now this guy would be an upper echelon corner in the NFL, and it's still there. And he has the carrot dangling in front of him of a, you know, a huge contract, whether it's from the Bengals or from someone else. So I kind of feel like, I mean, there's first round pedigree. There's a limited track record, but still a track record of success. I passed on Michael Jordan because I don't know. I mean, to me, one of the more interesting things about this season this year is, you know, what players on this year's offensive line are we going to be comfortable moving forward with in 2021? I'm guessing, you know, Jonah Williams is going to be on that list of guys that we're comfortable moving forward with. My guess is Trey Hopkins as well. My guess is the right side of the offensive line we're going to want them to fix. And then to me, the wild card in the whole thing is Michael Jordan at left guard. Jermaine Pratt, the pieces around him just aren't there. I've complained about Bengals linebacker seemingly my entire life, and my guess is I'm going to do that this season. There's certainly more speed. There's certainly more youth. There certainly was attention being paid to that position in the draft. I just don't know that Jermaine is going to be able to, you know, improve, yes, make a leap. I don't see that. Michael Jordan, I could see making a leap because, you know, maybe Jonah Williams is fine and maybe Trey Hopkins is fine. And maybe Michael Jordan, year two in the NFL, takes a major step forward, or maybe not. William Jackson III, I feel like will, in large part because I, you know, if you look at some of the advanced Pro Football Focus stuff, he really can't play any worse. So I'm going to go run William pass Mike Jordan and boot Jermaine Pratt.
I have the same three, but I'll add this. I think Pratt is the most important of these three. And I mean, yeah, William Jackson becoming a star at corner would be huge. Michael Jordan solidifying that left side of the line would be good, but you mentioned the right side would still be bad. I just feel like until they have one real linebacker, that defense is going to be a liability no matter what, how many free agents you add. Like, and he's the only shot at it. Like, those rookies are going to have rookie issues the same way Jermaine Pratt did last year. None of that. It's not Devin Bush and Devin White showing up in that room. It's Jermaine Pratt in year two is really what they're counting on. And teams will just annihilate them if they can't get competent play out of the linebacker room. And I think while I have it as well as the boot, I think it's the most important because if that does happen, suddenly you can really start to believe in this defense, assuming some of their free agent signings pay off like they think they will. I mean, they are better at every level. I will agree with that. Hard to be worse, but I do believe that they will be better there. But really the key to them getting there is linebackers, just the big question. And unless Jermaine Pratt can do it, I don't see anybody else there that's going to do it. Certainly not to the level that they need it. All right, on the flip side of this, run, pass, or boot, who is most likely to recapture their greatness for one season, one renaissance season this year? AJ Green, Geno Atkins, or Carlos Dunlap? Jay?
I don't know if Carlos fell off enough to kind of be in this recapture greatness category, but he's the one I'm running with. We saw what he did in the second half last year, really was kind of invisible in the first half last year and then turned it on toward the end of the year. And, you know, at that age, to be able to do that in the second half of a season that has gone totally south, I think he has more gas in the tank than Geno does. I'm passing on Geno just because of the presence of DJ Reader. I think he can really open things up. I don't know if Geno on his own can be the difference maker that he's been in the past, but he's never had somebody of DJ Reader's caliber next to him. So that's going to be really interesting to see how teams elect to double team in there. I don't know if they can double team Geno as much as they have in the past. And I'm booting AJ just because there's – number one, he's getting older, and receivers outside of Larry Fitzgerald don't typically get better as they get older. And the injury history, there's just too many question marks there to bank on him to recapture greatness. And even if he does have a totally, completely healthy year, I don't know that we're going to see AJ Green numbers that we've seen from early in his career. I think he's going to, you know, struggle to even get to the 1,000-yard mark this year. So that's the order I'm going to go. Run with Carlos Dunlap, pass on Geno Atkins, and boot AJ Green.
My order is almost the exact opposite. So I ran Geno for the main reason that you just articulated. He's never played with somebody the likes of DJ Reader, and then you could add to it with the history that Mike Daniels has had. So I sort of feel like just by virtue of playing with better teammates next to him, Geno is going to be able to recapture greatness. That verbiage, recapture greatness, is why I booted on Carlos Dunlap. Carlos Dunlap's been a very good player for a while. I don't know that I would ever go with great. I think Carlos Dunlap can achieve pretty goodness. I think Carlos Dunlap can be a productive member of this team. I know he's a really good guy. I don't know that I could say that a dude who's had 8 sacks or fewer in 7 of his 10 NFL seasons is ever going to recapture greatness. So to me, I got caught up in the verbiage. That's not a knock on Carlos. Not everybody's a great player. He's been a very good Bengal franchise's all-time sack leader. I really do understand all that. But on in a group that includes Carl Lawson and Sam Hubbard and maybe not the deepest defensive line, but some guys that I think could be very productive, could Carlos Dunlap be a big reason why that group collectively is very, very good? Absolutely. Do I feel like we're going to look at Carlos's numbers by the end of the year and be overwhelmed by them? Probably not. I passed on AJ Green because I don't know. How many games is he going to play? He's 32 years old. I haven't watched him play an NFL game, a full NFL game, since October of 2018. I certainly don't think that if he plays a full season, we're going to see, you know, vintage 2013 AJ Green numbers. But would it surprise me to see him still be very productive, still have some insanely good games, develop great chemistry with Joe Burrow, be the team's leading pass receiver, lead the team in touchdowns? That wouldn't surprise me. Would it surprise me if he played in 2 games? No, I mean, that wouldn't either. So I'm going to pass on AJ. I'm going to run with Geno. I'm going to boot Carlos.
So I like this. So we're each going to pick someone different that we run with. I'm running with AJ. I think, again, and it's like the health thing is all that you can really talk about with him, is whether he's going to be healthy or not. But I think he has a chance. I think he can stay healthy. I really do. I think that we make a big deal of you know, what happened last year, and he's had multiple injuries, but, you know, theoretically he's going to show up, maybe not 100% because of this hamstring thing, but it's a preseason soft tissue. We see guys go through this all the time, and then they have like 3 good games and you forget it ever even happened to them in camp, and they can come out. And I think he can be fine. And I still think he is good enough and that he can be have a great season. I really do. And I think with this offense and the other pieces that are around, he can still dominate. And I don't think Geno can. I think Geno has looked good in camp. I just cannot avoid 4 years of seeing the consistent appreciation of his production. I can't get past that. I want to. I really do. I want to believe when people tell me that they see Geno still being that guy and this, that, and the other. But it's 4 years. You just see it. Boom, 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 boom. It goes right down in every category you look at. Advanced analytic, basic sack, you know, pressures, whatever you judge it on, it's gone down every year. And I just don't think he can do it, even if he has people with him. Maybe I'm proven wrong. For his sake, I hope I am. I just don't see it. So I ran with AJ. I pass on Carlos because, like Jay, you said, I mean, the second half of last season, I think he's still got the ability to do it if he wants to. I just don't know if Geno can if he wants to, and I think that's probably the issue there. Let's go a quick look at run, pass, or boot on if they hit the over. So if things go well, let's run, pass, or boot the reason why out of these three. Offensive line, Burrow's great, or the defense. Which of those three? And obviously some of these are tied together. But what would be, you think, the primary reason if things go really well this season? Why did it happen? Jay, you start.
I'm running with Joe Burrow just based on what the quarterback position is in the game of football. I mean, he is the most important piece to all of this. And if he has a really good year, it may not matter what the defense and the offensive line do. I know that he's kind of tied to that offensive line, but he's so good out of the pocket and using his feet. He can make plays even if the O-line isn't giving him great protection. So I think he is the key to this whole thing of them hitting the over. I'm passing the defense just because it feels like if they make even a moderate step, that can have a big, because we expect this offense to be really good with all the pieces around Joe Burrow, even with the offensive line being a question mark. If that defense can go from being in the 30 range to the 20 range, that's going to make a huge difference. And that's going to give them a chance to win more games. I mean, as bad as the defense was last year, they were still in all those games. So you just make a moderate improvement and all of a sudden some of those one score games flip the other way and you're right there on the edge of the 5.5 number. I'm booting the offensive line just because I don't even know if them becoming great is an option. I don't think they're built for it. I don't see them. I think they can hit the over without a great performance from the offensive line. I don't even know if a great performance is in the cards from that group. If it happens, then sure. Yeah, it could be a really special year, but I just don't see that happening and being the reason why they would get over 5.5 wins.
Had the exact same order, Burrow, because of the importance of the position and because what having a great quarterback can do for your entire team. If he progresses at the rate that we hope, or if he hits the ground running. I mean, we keep talking about these first couple of games, like, boy, he's really going to struggle and they're not going to be able to block Joey Bosa and Myles Garrett and Melvin Ingram. Maybe, but maybe the dude's capable of doing something that we don't expect. You know, maybe he just somehow, some way, with a healthy-ish group of weapons, torches both of those teams. And you know, after 2 weeks, we're talking about how Joe Burrow is even better than we thought. But if this team hits the over, if they have 6 wins, it's hard for me to believe that Joe Burrow is going to have a bad rookie season. So I'm running with that. I'll pass on the defense. It's hard to be any worse. They did spend a lot of money. The personnel has changed largely. They're going to improve. Are they going to be good? Are they going to be a top half of the league defense? Probably not. They're going to be better. I just don't know that they're going to be good. And early in the season, I worry about them tackling. They didn't practice tackling. Tackling early in the season in the NFL is always a problem. So how problematic is it for a team that last year was bad tackling? Granted, the personnel has changed. This year didn't practice tackling, when in the early season tackling is always bad, and we didn't have preseason games. So I worry about that a little bit. And I'm booting on the offensive line for the same reason that Jay basically outlined, which is I just don't think this unit's going to be that good. And certainly their success is tied to the amount of success that Joe Burrow is going to have. But Joe Burrow at least has at his disposal a pretty enviable group of weapons. The offensive line, best case, is there any scenario where by the end of the year we're not wanting the Bengals to upgrade, to make upgrades on the offensive line? No. We're going to want them to go get a right tackle. Probably going to want them to go get a right guard. And maybe we want them to go get somebody else on the line. I just the ceiling for that group is so low that I'll boot it.
Here's why I'm running with the offensive line. It is because it's partially on the flip side of this question of how do they end up on the under? And that is because of the offensive line. Like, I think everything else is in place offensively and defensively and a little bit for them. I mean, the guys they added are guys that have some proven track records between Reeder and Bell and once Waynes comes back and Alexander. I mean, I think we kind of know a little bit that they should be better there. To me, the way it falls apart is if the offensive line is a disaster, and that is in play. So to me, on kind of, you know, going through weirdo logic here, is that if they're okay and they're not a disaster, they're going to hit the over. And I believe it because I as much as I think Burrow is going to be good. I don't know that there's much debate. I don't know that he's going to be this year able to, you know, carry a team over a bad offensive line. I think the offensive line being average is a big reason why they will be able to get where they need to get. And I don't know if they can get there if the line, the questions on the line end up being, you know, the answers you don't want to hear. So for that reason, I have it at the top, because I do think offensive line's average, they will win a bunch of games. I just think that I think there's too much going, assuming health, obviously, there's too much good going on in other positions there to see any other way. And so I pass on Burrow because I think he's just going to be, I think he's going to be solid. I think he's going to be very good. Yeah, I have all his numbers, my prediction for his numbers up, and they would put him as one of the best rookie seasons we've seen in the last 10 years. And it's the type of a season, if that's the case, that usually quarterbacks win a bunch of games. And so I think we'll probably see that. And I'll boot the defense just because, you know, obviously the defense needs to be good and needs to improve, but I think we kind of know, I feel like I have a decent feeling for what they are, and I don't think that they can be great, and I don't think they can be good enough to carry this team per se. I think they can be very good, but the linebackers are, to me, are just too big of an issue. We'll go out with, if things go wrong, why do they go wrong? Coach, quarterback growing pains, or health? Run, pass, or boot?
I'm running with health. I just think that's the one thing that can really derail things. If something were to happen to Burrow, or if the receivers have a rash of injuries, or Joe Mixon, any of those pieces on offense go down, and the season could go south in a hurry. I'm passing on growing pains for Burrow, just because it doesn't feel like, even if he has growing pains, it's going to be a bad year. Like, if he has growing pains, it's not going to look like Sam Darnold's rookie year. It's probably going to look like Baker Mayfield's rookie year, where he threw a lot of interceptions, but he also threw a lot of touchdowns, set the rookie touchdown record. I just think he's in position to have, even with struggles and growing pains, he's in position to have a pretty solid rookie quarterback year. I'm going to boot coach just because I don't know that he has that much of an impact on wins and losses, what he does in game. Last year, I wouldn't say he was one of the top reasons for 2-14. And you have to figure he's going to be better. He's going to make better decisions in the red zone. He's got better command of the group, the locker room as a whole. He's got his culture in place. I don't think Zach Taylor is going to be the problem if things go south this year. The number one reason would be health, which is I'm running with. Pass on growing pains and boot Zach Taylor.
Again, exact same order. I went with health for a couple of different reasons. Number one, when we talk about health, I know nobody wants to do this. We have to add another dimension of health, which is COVID. I mean, there's all the different ways a player can miss a game, and now there's another one. And it could be completely unforeseen, and it can happen after a guy's had a great week of practice and he's totally healthy, and then, you know, positive test, he can't play. And that can happen to anybody. That's independent of what position you play. So, and plus, we've just seen what happens to the Bengals when they don't have A.J. Green. We've seen what happens to this team when it's missing key components. I don't think their depth is to the point that they could overcome that. And then the Burrow factor. Look, if Joe Burrow has to miss games for whatever reason and Ryan Finley has to play, I expect them to lose those games. So health is reason number one. Growing pains, I sort of feel like the growing pains are built in. That's why the number's 5.5. He's going to have them. We know that. If he does not, he's going to do something that is largely unprecedented in the history of the NFL, where a rookie quarterback comes in and he's great instantly. That really doesn't happen. Patrick Mahomes was not a rookie 2 years ago, so if anybody wants to throw that in my face, he did sit and watch Alex Smith for a year. I feel like the growing pains, it's inherent. He's going to struggle. He's going to have moments where you roll your eyes, or where, you know, it costs the team a game, or maybe, you know, there's – It creates a moment in a game that couldn't happen at the worst time. The coaching thing, I don't know. Again, Zach Taylor may be every bit as smart as people claim. He may be totally in over his head. He may be completely equipped to handle you know, helping to groom a new quarterback and balancing all the different ways that football in 2020 has changed and the expectations and having to cash in on the investments that the front office made. I don't know. I don't know, but I think the health of this team, if a couple of weeks into the season we're dealing with massive carnage in one position group, or Burrow gets hurt, or AJ has to miss an extended amount of time, then I think the wheels fall off for this team, at least in terms of its ability to come close to six wins. So I'll go run health, pass quarterback growing pains, and I'll boot Zach Taylor.
I have pretty much the same order, but there's one thing that I will say. That order is not how who people will blame if things go wrong. I can tell you that much. I mean, if things go wrong, we know who fans will blame. They'll blame the coach, because they always blame the coach. And that's, you know, you're now outside of, you know, Burrow getting hurt. And maybe throw AJ in there. I think people, if anything other than that happens, I think they'll say that the coach needs to find a way to win despite of that. I go back to Mike Zimmer when he was the defensive coordinator here in 2013. He lost Geno Atkins midseason and a couple other guys, and people say, oh, they're doomed, right? But it's the good coaches. They find a way to get past that and put other guys in and have them step up. And that's kind of, you know, I think what you're looking for from a head coach is being able to find a way to overcome that stuff. And I think that's what people will hold over his head a little bit. I also think there's a good chance that he's a big reason why they win a lot of games. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a double-edged sword in that case. But inevitably, I think they're better built to withstand injury this year, certainly, than last year. This is not the house of cards that it was last year. But the AJ factor is really the key in this. Like, I think they have backup at most positions. They just don't have receiver 1A yet as a backup, or even somebody of that level. And that's so much hinges on him. It's really interesting that, because I just, you know, you can, if he plays the whole year, you can really see things going very well. But if he doesn't, you can see it looking a lot like last year at times, been complaining about the lack of having, you know, explosion in the passing game and this, that, and the other. And well, it took a while for T. Higgins to develop and this, and there's just, you know, there's a lot riding on AJ Green's health. And that is, that it should make everyone uneasy, is why I have health at the top. Mo, did you give me an official? Do you have your official number, your official prediction out yet? Or are you have you figured it out?
Official? What? No.
What is your record prediction?
I think they're going to go 6-10, and I hate that because it's a cop out. Because everybody's going to say that.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to say, so. Yeah, I think they're going to go 6-10. When the Bengals are going to be good, I pick them to go 10-6, and when the Bengals aren't going to be good, I pick them to go 6-10. So, I think they're about a 6-win team. I think Vegas has it pegged. You know, I think I'll walk away from the season pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I would agree. I almost predicted a tie for this year.
I did that one year because I wanted Marvin Lewis to break the record because he currently holds it, I think, with Bart Starr for most ties in the modern era since we have went to overtime. And I predicted one year. I'm like, they're going to go. I think I went 6-9-1. Because I'm like, you know what, Marvin, if there's a coach you can bet on to have a tie, it's Marvin. And people got mad at me. Like, how can you pick a tie? I'm like, well, how could I not? What the one game, well, which game are they going to tie? That's where they stumped me because I didn't know. But yeah,
one of them. Look, it was, they had one in 08, in 14, and in 16. They feel due.
Yeah.
They feel due for a tie. And this, right. And I was in between 6-7 wins, and I couldn't decide. And I thought, you know what I could do? I could just split the middle. I could just totally pick the tie, go 6-9-1. I opted not to, but I was very close to doing. I went with the encouraging 7-9 because I do feel like at the end of the year, I think they will get a couple of those big wins that we were talking about earlier and have that encouraging season. I do feel like they have that in them, but still, God, predicting a tie and then it happening would be the ultimate vindication.
If they do tie, I hope it's Washington, because that would probably be the first time in NFL history teams had tied in back-to-back meetings.
It's all they do. It's all they do. All right, Mo, thank you so much for hopping in and you know.
I think I wrote a piece for the radio station blog in what was going to be, we thought, Marvin's last game against Pittsburgh. And I think I wrote, like, oh, it's going to be 17-17. They're going to give him a Gatorade bath after he sets the new record for most ties in his last game. And if you remember, that game was pretty close. And for a while, I thought, man, this could actually happen. What better way would there – for a coach whose legacy is so uneven, what better way to walk out than to have his last game end on, like, a missed field goal at the end of overtime where they have a chance to win and they don't, and it's a tie against the Steelers. And unfortunately, it didn't happen.
I think, how would you celebrate? Like, if winning something is like you do the big Gatorade bath and the giant jug that you pour on somebody, what do you do celebrating a tie? Is it just like one little bottle of water that you just kind of pour on their pants or something like that? I mean, what? I feel like it needs to be something that kind of just makes you uncomfortable and not like an actual celebration. I think that's what it is. I think it's one bottle of
Dasani. You guys should have asked Marvin Lewis leading up to one of those last games.
There were a lot of press conferences where I needed a question like that.
What are you going to do if you break the record for most times?
Is that a point of pride for you? Yeah. All right. Well, Mo, appreciate you coming on. Thank you. It was a blast. I look forward to us talking for an hour tomorrow again.
And I'm excited.
We'll probably cover a lot of the same ground.
And Jay, we're going to call you on Thursdays again, so be ready.
Okay, that sounds good.
Looking forward to that. All right, thanks, everybody. I appreciate everybody listening to hear that podcast growling. And,
hey, Paul.
Yes.
I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. But before we get out of here, I just want to congratulate you and Jay on 100 excellent episodes of Hear That Podcast Growling.
Wow.
Hey.
Whoa.
Is this the business 100?
Out of how many?
That's left to be seen.
we tried to do 108 and we did 100, so that's a good winning percentage. And hey, and we got a good sound. That sound kind of felt like a water bottle on the pants a little bit. That was kind of nice. That's awesome. And we'll be back for 101 on Thursday on the Growler, so we'll be previewing the Chargers game and taking a deeper look at that. So looking forward to it. Thanks, everybody. Hope everybody that's listening to all 100, the four of you that did that, you're awesome. Thank you so much. I look forward to hopefully listening to us for the next 100. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. I'll give this podcast ground.